Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book Generation of Swine: Tales of Shame and Degradation in the 80s is a nonfiction collection by Hunter S. Thompson, first published in 1988 as the second volume of the Gonzo Papers. It gathers columns Thompson wrote for the San Francisco Examiner from the mid-1980s through 1988, turning daily political commentary into a sustained portrait of Reagan-era America. The book is not a conventional history or a straight memoir. It is a series of sharp, highly personal dispatches that mix reportage, satire, rage, and dark comedy. Thompson uses his Gonzo style to attack political hypocrisy, media spectacle, cultural decline, and the absurdities of public life, while also revealing his own volatility and disillusionment. The result is both a document of its time and a demonstration of his method journalism as performance, judgment, and social critique at once. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Gonzo journalism as political attack rather than detached reporting. The book is a strong example of Thompson's Gonzo journalism, which rejects the idea that a writer should remain invisible or neutral. Instead of summarizing events from a distance, he inserts his own mood, anger, and bias into the reporting itself. That approach gives the columns a distinctive force, because readers are not only told what happened in the 1980s, but also how one unusually aggressive observer experienced it. The method is effective for political writing because it exposes the emotional texture behind public events, contempt for politicians, disgust with corruption, and impatience with spin. At the same time, it also creates instability. Thompson is often more interested in moral verdicts than balanced analysis, so the writing can feel prophetic one moment and exaggerated the next. This tension is part of the book's value. It shows how Gonzo journalism works as both literature and commentary, using excess, style, and personal perspective to challenge official narratives rather than merely describe them. Secondly, a savage portrait of Reagan-era politics and the 1988 presidential race. A central concern of the book is American politics during Ronald Reagan's second term and the lead-up to the 1988 presidential election. Thompson treats the period as a carnival of manipulation, ambition, and ideological emptiness. He follows the Republican field, including George H.W. Bush and rival contenders, not as a neutral election observer, but as a critic looking for signs of fraud, mediocrity, and opportunism. The political world in these columns is full of posturing and symbolic theater, which Thompson believes hides a deeper collapse in civic standards. His satire is especially pointed when he discusses the Republican obsession with drugs and moral panic, since he sees that language as hypocritical and politically convenient. The importance of this theme is that the book captures the mood of late 1980s American politics better than a conventional campaign chronicle might. It shows politics not as a contest of ideas, but as an arena where image management, fear, and media exposure increasingly dominate substance. Thirdly, media saturation, cable news, and the new politics of nonstop spectacle. Thompson repeatedly returns to the changing media environment of the 1980s, especially the rise of cable television, satellite broadcasting, and CNN. For him, this expansion of constant coverage does not automatically improve public understanding. It often intensifies confusion and spectacle. The book suggests that politics is being remade by the speed and volume of media, which favors quick impressions over serious judgment. Thompson is alert to how public life becomes harder to separate from entertainment when news is available all the time and every event is packaged for attention. This is one reason the book still feels current. It is not just about the specific technologies of the 1980s, but about the broader problem of media systems that reward outrage, simplification, and repetition. Thompson's columns anticipate a world in which image is often more powerful than evidence. His critique is not nostalgic or conservative in any simple sense. It is a warning that the machinery of modern news can flatten reality, making politics look more like a show than a system of decisions with real consequences. Fourthly, economic anxiety, inequality, and the sense of a nation coming apart. Beyond politics and media, the book also reflects deep concern about the economic mood of the decade. Thompson writes from a position of cynicism about national debt, unemployment, and the widening gap between the rich and poor. He does not treat these as abstract policy issues, but as signs of a broader social decay. The effect is to connect public corruption with material insecurity when wealth concentrates and ordinary people feel abandoned. Political discourse becomes easier to manipulate and moral language becomes hollow. Thompson's commentary is often extreme, but his underlying diagnosis is clear. He sees a country that is becoming more unequal while congratulating itself on prosperity, and that contradiction fuels his bitterness. This theme matters because it prevents the book from being read only as partisan invective. It is also a social critique of an economy that produces winners, losers, and a growing sense of alienation. The columns therefore record not just electoral conflict, but a larger breakdown in trust, fairness, and common purpose. Lastly, dark humor, biblical apocalypse, and the rhetoric of cultural collapse, Thompson's style in the book depends heavily on dark humor, verbal aggression, and recurring apocalyptic imagery. He frequently uses exaggerated insults, grotesque metaphors, and references to Revelation to frame political life as a moral disaster. This is not just decorative or rhetoric. It is one of the ways he conveys the scale of his disgust with the era. The biblical language gives the columns a sense of judgment and doom, as if American public life has entered a period of punishment and exposure. At the same time, the humor keeps the writing from becoming merely solemn. Thompson often makes his case by being funny, offensive, and theatrically over the top, which gives the book its energy and memorability. This style also explains why readers may react differently to it. Some will see insight sharpened by comedy, while others will see ranting that overshoots its target. That split is part of the book's identity. It is both a record of political anger and a performance of that anger, written in a voice that turns outrage into literary form. In conclusion, Generation of Swine will appeal most to readers interested in political journalism, American culture of the 1980s, and the development of gonzo writing. It is especially useful for readers who want more than a factual recap of the Reagan years, since Thompson offers a lived, subjective, and often blistering account of the decade's public mood. Those who appreciate satire, cultural criticism, and unconventional nonfiction will find the book intellectually rewarding, even when they disagree with his judgments. Its practical value lies in showing how media framing, political branding, and rhetorical excess can shape public reality. Its literary value lies in the power of Thompson's voice, which transforms newspaper columns into something closer to a furious cultural essay cycle. Compared with more standard political books, it stands out because it does not aim for balance, detachment, or institutional respectability. Instead, it captures the era through excess, temperament, and moral disgust, making it a distinctive document of its time and of Thompson's singular method. If you would like to support Hunter S. Thompson, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.